Do you know what? Once you know that it's not you, you're not doing anything wrong, we're usually okay. We're okay with rejection. We're okay with being alone. We're okay with isolation. We're okay with everything. Once we know it's not our fault that we're not doing something that displeases God.
Right.
Once we know we're pleasing God, we're okay with whatever the world is doing to us. But somebody put questioning yourself if you're doing wrong in a meeting of godly men. They put that guilt on you. They put that question on you that makes you feel insecure about whether or not you're doing right and pleasing God. You know? That's not good. That's not cool. You need to come back to your peace. You are who you are. You are who He made you to be. Yes, you're having to learn to be a little quieter in that atmosphere. But if He puts something on that you need to say, then you need to say it, whether it fits what they want you to do or not. Maybe they needed to hear it, even if it offended or upset them or they thought you talked too long. Maybe they needed to hear it. You know, and then in the body, you're the adrenal gland, and, you know, we don't always want our adrenal glands so overstimulated all the time, but we still need an adrenal gland. Lord, we just want to separate ourselves from this day, from all the busyness, worldliness, interruptions, confusions. We just want You to capture our thoughts and just bring us into Your realm and just open up Your word to us. We are going to talk about Babylon. So we're going to look at Babylon in a few different places in Revelation. So not necessarily trying to absolutely be positive of the timeline of this where it fits, but the understanding of what Babylon is about. So we're just going to take the perspective that we are going to be here at the destruction of Babylon because it looks like that. But just what God is trying. Because He took many chapters where He mentioned it and explained it and talked about the great whore of Babylon, and He had so much to say about it. I think it's important that we really get a revelation of what He's talking about, because there is a literal Babylon in the Old Testament, which whenever the Israelites, whenever they were taken captive and taken into Babylon, it meant they became slaves. So whenever we are taken captive by the world system, we become a slave to the carnality, to the systems of this kingdom. So I think there's always a double meaning that I think there will be a literal place, not necessarily named Babylon, but there will be a literal destruction of that great city. But when it talks about the great city, it also says when it fell, so that the cities of many nations fell. So there's a parallel meaning. There is a destruction of something representing a literal place, because there's an earthquake that divides the city, but there's also a destruction of the financial system, the whole system.
Like New York City, that's such a hub of finances worldwide.
Well, it could be, but I think it's actually more, we've always thought it was indicative of the United Nations, but now I think this new world order is even bigger than the United Nations. It's far beyond what we've seen with United Nations. I think that it's something that's coming into place now, like the one world system. So in that, because it says that this Babylon sits upon many waters, meaning the control of all the nations, the kings that have united to form that system. So it's more like a system than just one city.
Well, when you said a city.
Yeah.
That's
well, it's calling it a city, but it calls the whole system of Babylon, it calls it a city. So like she sits, the great city that sits on the nations. So anyway, we're going to start in Revelation 14, verse 8. And there followed another angel. And we're actually into the last plague being poured out here. It says, and there followed another angel saying, Babylon is fallen, that great city, because she made all nations drink of the wine of the wrath of her fornication. So there's words there describing her as a great city, describing Babylon as feminine, a she, and it talks about her fornication, meaning she is guilty of adultery against God, the total adultery system that's anti-everything of God. Then we're going to Revelation 16, verse 19. And it says, and this great city was divided into three parts. This is after a big earthquake. And the cities of the nations fell, and great Babylon came in remembrance before God to give unto her the cup of the wine of the fierceness of his wrath. So we're seeing the great city. We're seeing it mentioned as a woman again. And when it says after this earthquake that the great city was divided into three parts, and the cities of the nations fell. So that shows you that it's got to be more than just one city. And the cities of the nations, there's a connection to all these nations. And I still think we're looking at something like the one world system that's being brought. And again, when Obama was elected into office, I went on, God had me go on and look at the one world order that was being formed way back then. And there were actual listed rules for any nation to become a recognized member of the one world order. They had to comply to this list of rules. They had to bring their nation into compliance. And there were things on there like the government had to have the control of the banking so they could bring it into the one world banking system. So they didn't want these privately owned banks running things. And right around that time, when Obama was elected, one of the first things we started seeing big conglomerates being overtaken by the government. You know, they were accusing them of illegal things, and then, like Enron, they were taking over companies and bringing them under government control. They were bringing all the major banking under government control so that they could bring it under the one world order control. And then there was things on Planned Parenthood, many, many different things that were on that list. It was like President Obama just went down item by item by item, bringing America in line with the one world order. That was his agenda, you know, and he accomplished a lot of that. So it's kind of everybody knows the one world order is becoming more and more powerful, but they look at it as world unity, world peace, everybody coming together and being in peace. And so there's a great deception in that. So it's obvious that Babylon is this system, this conglomerate of nations together that has a lot of power and influence over the entire world. So I think we're looking at the entire system of worldliness. We're looking at wealth and power and recognition and fame and all this system that the devil has used to corrupt God's people. And, you know, like we talked about it before, and we'll talk about it again, but he's enslaving people to their own fear or lust by using money, by using fame, by using threats of fear, you know, that we're afraid of ISIS, we're afraid of things, so we want to come into the world unity so that this bigger power can protect us. So when those strategies no longer work for his purpose, because that's using our own selfishness and our own greed to satisfy our comfort and our lust. And when he gets to the point where he knows he's already gathered the people away from God, then he doesn't really want them to continue to serve themselves. He wants them to serve only him. So at that point, he wants to destroy Babylon. And we'll read that in a little while, that he actually is the one that God uses to bring the destruction of Babylon. So in Revelation 16:19, it says, the great city Babylon was divided into three parts. This was a result of the seventh angel pouring out this wrath, this vial of the wrath of God. This was the beginning of the wrath of God. When the seventh trumpet sounded, it actually released the beginning of the plagues that were coming. And verse 17 through 21. I don't think I put it all red here. And the seventh angel poured out his vial into the air, and there came a great voice out of the temple of heaven from the throne, saying, it is done. And there were voices and thunders and lightnings. And there was a great earthquake, such as was not since men were upon the earth, so mighty an earthquake and so great. And the great city was divided into three parts. And the cities of the nations fell, and great Babylon came in remembrance before God to give unto her the cup of the wine of the fierceness of his wrath. And every island fled away, and the mountains were not found. So I think we're seeing here again the symbolic destruction of the financial system and the whole system that the devil used pride and selfishness to build on. So the literal place that's the heart of the trade and the wealth of the merchants is destroyed in the whole world system. The literal Babylon also was destroyed by Satan himself, because he had reached this point where he didn't need that strategy. He had his servants serving him, purely serving him at this point. So when he takes away using pride and lust, lying to men, saying, you know, I'm going to give you what you want that God won't let you have. I'm going to make you wealthy. I'm going to make you famous. I'm going to give you all this comforts and safety. When he takes that away from them and says, now you are my slave, you serve me, now the men have nothing to hold on to, and out of fear, they just serve Satan because they're afraid not to. I mean, he looks powerful. If you don't take his mark, you're going to have your head cut off. Or, you know, so now it is a pure fear, like lick the hand of your master here if you want to live, rather than him lying anymore to saying, I'm going to give you what you want. He doesn't need that deception at this point. So he wants to destroy Babylon. Okay, so in Revelation 16, I just want to briefly, this is when the vials of God begin to pour out. And a lot of people think that Christians won't be here at that time. But these things are pouring out before the very end comes. We're going to see the first plague, which we just saw up there where Babylon fell. Then there's the sores upon men who had the mark of the beast in the first plague. Second plague, the sea became as blood and everything in the sea died. Third plague, the rivers and fountains became blood and everything in them died. Fourth plague was upon the sun, which scorched men with fire. The fifth plague was upon the seed of the beast, his kingdom full of darkness and pain. The sixth plague was upon the river Euphrates. The waters dried up to make a way for the kings to come into the battle of Armageddon with God. So, and then it says at this point the devil becomes more powerful. He has miracles that he's performing and using to get these kings to follow him into battle against God. So all of these first six things happen, and I believe that Christians are still here. The reason that's important is because when that city was divided into three, I kept asking God, what is the revelation of that? Why that city of Babylon, if it's symbolic, why is it divided into three? What does that stand for? And I think what he showed me this morning is it represents the heathen,
the three groups of people divided.
It represents the heathen where his wrath will be poured out on them in Armageddon. It represents the Christians that are still here as witnesses walking with Christ to win anybody who is moving toward Christ. And then it represents those who are moving toward Christ, those who might get saved at that point, those who might already be saved but they haven't been living for God. They haven't committed to God. They've kind of been wishy-washy Christians. So there's people who are moving toward God. There's Christians who are going to lead them to God. And then there's the heathen who are going to be destroyed. So when we see these plagues happening, they're not going to touch, at this point, they're not going to touch the people of God. We've passed the part where it's just Satan persecuting Christians to a point where there is some protection now from the vials of the wrath of God not touching the Christians. In the parallel of Egypt, when Moses was there and he said, if you don't let my people go, then these things will happen to you, plague after plague after plague. God's people were there. Moses represented the witness, walking right into the face of the enemy saying, let my people go that they might serve God. And in the end times, we're going to see Christians saying, come out of Babylon, come out of Babylon, come out of this system, come to God. And Satan, take your hands off this one that they can come to God. And we're going to see some people come out and come to God. But we're also going to see that we reach the seventh plague, which is when Christ comes, Battle of Armageddon. And that's the final thing. That's where the Egyptians were just destroyed and the sea swallowed them up for coming after the Christians. So there's a protection on people coming toward God from the plagues of God. This is different than when they were being persecuted by Satan. God will not put his plagues on those who are coming toward him. So that was important to realize. When we see these horrible things happening, that we that are of God don't need to be afraid of those things. We need to be afraid of the deception of the devil in giving in to take his mark out of fear. And then after that, the seventh vial, when that final vial, it will be the Battle of Armageddon. Anyway, that was just a little view of what is going on at this same time that we're seeing the end of Babylon and the end of that whole system. So go to Revelation 17 now. I want to look at God's explaining the whole system of Babylon to us. So in verse 1 in chapter 17, and there came one of the seven angels which had the seven vials and talked with me, saying unto me, come here, and I will show you the judgment of the great whore that sits upon many waters. So again, Babylon is referred to as a woman, but as a great whore. Now, a great whore isn't the drunk one stumbling around in town that looks like, you know, like she's just a dirty mess. The great whore is the one that's dressed in scarlet, and she's beautiful, and she's quite a seductive temptress. And that's the picture of Babylon. In verse 2, with whom the kings of the earth have committed fornication, and the inhabitants of the earth have been made drunk with the wine of her fornication. So the rulers, the kings, the powerful people that have committed adultery against God with this Babylonian system of lust and wealth and power, and also the common people. So this system of pride and selfishness and greed has been intoxicating to people. And we're going to see that more and more as we go on with this description in verse 3. So he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness, and I saw a woman sitting upon a scarlet-colored beast, full of names of blasphemy, having seven heads and ten horns. Now we notice that the system of carnality and of lust and greed is ushered in on the beast. She's ushered in by Satan. But it isn't something he wants to keep using. Again, it's a system he used. He brought it in, he used it for his purposes, and then he discards it when he's done with it. So the seven heads and the ten horns will be explained in a minute. Full of the names of blasphemy. Names mean the identification, the character. A name is used that describes everything about someone. And this woman, her whole name, everything about her, is blasphemy against God. That means exactly opposite of everything that God is. And what stands out to me with the temptations of Satan is that he's such a liar that he gives you exactly opposite of what he promises. Like he says, if you had a lot of money, you'd be safe and secure. And nobody's safe and secure by money. If you were really pretty, everybody would like you. Nobody likes you for being pretty. They want to be pretty themselves. They're jealous and hateful toward other people that have what they don't have. So everything he says you'll get through this lust doesn't satisfy anything at all. So if she's so evil, Why do men desire her? Look at verse 4 through 6. The woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet, decked with gold and precious stones and pearls, having a golden cup in her hand, full of abominations and filthiness of her fornication. And upon her forehead was a name written, Mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and abominations of the earth. And I saw a woman drunk with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. And when I saw her, I wondered with great admiration. And the angel said unto me, Wherefore did you marvel? Do you know how powerful deception can be? John is a man of God. In a vision, he's been in this vision already through all these chapters. He has seen heaven, he's seen angels, he's seen Jesus. And he's right now with an angel in the presence of God, attended by this angel who's telling him the truth of the evil, and he's still overtaken in awe by her beauty. He's still marveling, admiring her, because she's so tempting to his carnal eye. The colors that she wears, the jewelry that glistens and sparkles, and I think the cup in her hand, even though it's filled with the blood of martyrs, I think the devil caused an extreme thirst in John in that moment, where he was so thirsty he would have drank whatever was in her cup. He was marveling. He was in awe, desiring this woman and saying to the angel, Wow, she is awesome. She's the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. You know, and he was tempted right there. And the angel says, Why were you marveling over her? Why were you tempted by her? And I think that's an amazing question. That's an amazing question. When we know something is evil, why are we still so consumed with it? When we know that it's not of God, what is it about evil that makes it so appealing even when we know that it's wrong? You know, what is it? And I think the answer is craving to fulfill our basic needs. A craving that he lies about, you know, that he will give us those things that we're craving. Acceptance. People will accept us. People will like us. People will want to take us to lunch and be our best friend. And people will admire us or respect us. We want to know that our life had value, that people see what we do and they appreciate what we do. And all those things that our nature craves, that he says he can fulfill through these things. But he's a liar. And all those things are only fulfilled by God. They're only fulfilled by God. But the devil plays on our basic needs. If you're feeling lonely, he can send you a friend who's not a good friend. But they'll still comfort you and make you feel good for the moment. Or he can give you something that makes a temporary happiness, you know, and fulfill that need. So he plays on our needs. Very young. Exactly. Mom and dad don't. You know, they get mad at you over something, and then there's the devil just wanting to give you something to make you feel better, you know, through a bad friend or a childhood friend. And even somebody told me that they became good friends with demons, became very demonic, that these demons were the only ones that cared that they ever got anything they wanted or had any fun. Because nobody in the house cared about them. Nobody cared if they ever had their way or anything they wanted. But these demon lovers came along and cared that they felt good or had fun or had pleasure. Only the demons cared about giving them that. They even knew it was demons. But they said they couldn't give up these demon friends because they cared about them. The lie, the deception, you know. Most people don't even know it's a demon. Well, it's like everything in this world and this, you know, the things we crave, like you'd give anything to have something. And it's so inferior to what God wants us to have in eternity. And it's such a lure of the devil just to win us away from God, to defy God, to steal God's people, to corrupt them. You know, because that is his big battle, is to defy God. and to corrupt us. So we need to just realize that the beauty is enticing, the feelings, the temporary fulfilling of a lust is enticing, but it's a lie, and it's not long-term satisfying. So anyway, this angel fortunately rescued poor John from himself, and if we stay close to God, you know, he can give us truth to set us free. In verse 7b, we go back in the through 16, chapter verse 16, the angel says, I will tell you the mystery of the woman and of the beast that carries her, which has the seven heads and the ten horns. The beast you saw was and is not, and shall ascend out of the bottomless pit and go into perdition. And they that dwell on earth will wonder, whose names were not written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, when they behold the beast that was and is not and yet is. So he's talking about Satan. He's talking about the deceiver and the beast that carries in all of this and how he comes forth out of that pit and deceives everyone. And here's the mind that has wisdom. The seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman sits. Seven is a number of completion, and I think at this point, you know, a lot of people have tried to say the seven hills of Rome, and Rome is the center of everything. But I think that this number seven actually, and it's calling it mountains, I think it's the seven most powerful nations maybe of the world. At least it's a complete picture of the highest authority in the world at this point. I think it's the one world order again, but it's representative of all the power and the height of that power. And there are seven kings, so I think, again, those are the main authorities of it. Five are fallen, one is, the other has not yet come, and when he comes, he must continue a short space. And the beast that was and is not, even he's the eighth, and is of the seventh, and goes into perdition. So we're talking about these world powers that unite together, and there's a changing of these were all here, and one fell away, and another one came in. But when it gets to where the seventh one falls away, and an eighth one comes in, we're talking about the rise of the beast in the end days. That final, last, seventh one, the final power that comes in will be the Antichrist. It will be the power of the Antichrist in the end. And the seventh and the eighth are the very demonic. And we keep talking about the dragon and the beast. That's why I think we have a seventh and an eighth, because I think we have the dragon and the beast. We've always looked for one Antichrist, but they keep talking about the dragon and the beast. And the dragon causes, the beast causes everybody to worship the dragon. So the dragon is the devil himself. But the beast might be the representative of him. And the ten horns you saw are ten kings, which have received no kingdom yet, but they receive power as kings 1 hour with the beast. These have one mind, and they give their power and their strength unto the beast. So these last ten kings that don't even exist until he comes in power, and then he has 10 appointed leaders, and through these 10, he destroys Babylon. He destroys the world system. And they have their power with him 1 hour, and you'll see in a minute that Babylon is destroyed in 1 hour. So whatever that hour represents, he uses these kings to destroy this whole world system. The people he puts in power takes down the whole system of trade among the nations, and he destroys the whole seven mountains. He takes apart the whole thing to where all worship is of Satan himself and no one else. Nothing else. These shall make war with the Lamb, and the Lamb shall overcome them, for he is Lord of lords and King of kings, and they that are with him are called and chosen and faithful. 15. And he said unto me, the waters which you saw where the whore sits are peoples and multitudes and nations and tongues. That's why I don't think it could just be New York or any certain city, because when you say on the waters, you're not putting a land. You're putting over the entire world. And you're talking all nations, all languages, all people. And the 10 horns which you saw upon the beast, these will hate the whore and make her desolate and naked and eat her flesh and burn her with fire. So these 10 kings, that the rising of the Antichrist appoints these 10 leaders that take out the entire system of trade and wealth and feeding the lust of men. So we see these are appointed by him, and they hate Babylon. Satan doesn't need it anymore. He's in full power now. So it's not the direct hand of God, like fire fell out of heaven to destroy Babylon. God wants Babylon destroyed. But he uses the devil to do it, because the devil also hates Babylon. God wants to have people not living in selfishness and pride, but the devil doesn't want that either. He just wants them to serve him. Verse 17. For God has put in their hearts, these 10 rulers, to fulfill his will and to agree and to give their kingdom unto the beast until the words of God shall be fulfilled. So God put it in the hearts of these evil 10 kings to go ahead and obey the devil and destroy Babylon. And the woman which you saw is that great city which reigns over the kings of the earth. It's got to be something like the New World Order, something huge. Revelation 18. Is any of this just opening up more to you to see Babylon differently? Or is it still confusing? Is it? Because I feel like God's just really, when I walk out in this world, literally, not just in Scripture, and I start looking at how people function, what they think, what makes them do what they do, self-included, why do we want what we want? How do we view everything here? It's like Babylon is just screaming at me every day saying, this kingdom, this kingdom, this kingdom, and all the lies and deceptions of this kingdom. It's just not worth it. It's not worth caring about what we care about here. You know? It's all deception. It's all deception. And money's not evil. And loving colors and loving... You know, a diamond is beautiful. It's absolutely, amazingly beautiful. But when it becomes nothing but a dollar sign, how much could I get for this? What is it worth in dollars? Then it's become a total corrupted view of the diamond. I mean, it's supposed to be beautiful and enjoy looking at it, but not to see how wealthy you can get by having one, or how you can show off how wealthy you are because of the size of one you have. You know, that's the total corruption of the beauty. God made beautiful gems and jewels, and they're in heaven. He uses them to design heaven. He talks about the streets of gold and the gems that are on the gates of the city, and he loves the beauty of everything that he made. But it's not about financial wealth or pride or showing off. It's the pure beauty of the colors and the flowers and the things that God made. And it's not the greed of, I have to have it, it's mine. It's the heart of loving to give and share, you know.
Be big enough to see the color, though.
Okay, Revelation 8. We start with 1 through 3. And after these things I saw another angel come down from heaven, having great power, and the earth was lightened with his glory. And he cried mightily with a strong voice, saying, Babylon the great is fallen, and has become the habitation of devils and the hold of every foul spirit and a cage of every unclean and hateful bird. So when this devil really begins to show his true nature, he takes out feeding men their own. Wouldn't you like to sing beautiful? Wouldn't you like to have a nice house? Wouldn't you like to have this? And he takes all that deception away that he's here to serve you. And now it is a habitation completely occupied by his evil.
We're gone by then, right?
Nope. We're still not gone. We're still not gone because, well, we'll see it in a minute. And the reason that God had to allow his earth to become so polluted and occupied by these devils is the next verse. Because, or for, all the nations have drunk of the wine of the wrath of her fornication. Because the nations all wanted to be a part of Babylon. They were drunk. They were intoxicated by everything she offered them. And the kings of the earth committed fornication with her, and the merchants of the earth waxed rich through the abundance of her delicacies. And because that's what they chose. Now the result is payday. Sin took you further than you wanted to go, kept you longer than you wanted to stay, and cost you more than you wanted to pay. Now the people are seeing, I don't have my wealth. I don't have those things I lusted after. Now all I have is enslavement to this evil, wicked ruler, to the devil. Delicacies doesn't just mean delicious food. It means luxury, excessiveness of lust. So will we be there? Look at verse 4. At that point, he says, and I heard another voice from heaven saying, come out of her, my people, that you be not partakers of her sins, and that you receive not of her plagues. So he's saying, come out of this system. Be after God. And you won't have these plagues come on you. Even though you're here, you don't have to be a part of Babylon. And if you're not a part of it, then you don't have to suffer the plagues that are coming. So it shows, again, that we will be here. But we don't have to suffer with her if we're not part of her. We could just read the rest of chapter 18 from 4 on. Verse 5, her sins have reached unto heaven, and God hath remembered her iniquities. Reward her as she has rewarded you, and double unto her double according to her works. In the cup which she has filled to her double. How much she has glorified herself and lived deliciously, so much torment and sorrow give her. For she said in her heart, I sit a queen, I'm no widow, I'll see no sorrow. Therefore shall her plagues come in one day, death and mourning and famine, and she shall be utterly burned with fire, for strong is the Lord God who judges her. So it is God's judgment, but it's brought in by the devil and his 10 kings. And the kings of the earth who have committed fornication and lived deliciously with her shall bewail her and lament for her when they see the smoke of her burning, standing afar off for the fear of her torment, saying, alas, alas, that great city, Babylon, that mighty city, for in 1 hour is thy judgment come. You see that 1 hour? 1 hour the kings were in power, 1 hour she's judged. Now, what does he do with those kings after the 1 hour when he's done using them? You know, he just uses people. What happened to them after their hour when their job was done? Yeah. Verse 11, and the merchants of the earth shall weep and mourn over her, for no man buys their merchandise anymore. The merchandise of gold. Now listen, we're going to list all the merchandise. And I used to try to identify what nation is Babylon? Who has all this? I don't think one nation has all of this. I think, again, it's talking of the wealth of the entire world. All the nations, the great wealth of all the nations. The merchandise of gold and silver, precious stones, pearls, fine linen, purple, silk, scarlet, fine wood, all manner of vessels of ivory, and all manner vessels of most precious wood. Every single type of precious wood can't come from one nation. It has to come from all over the world. Yeah. And of brass and iron and marble. Marble, primarily, I mean, there's a lot of it in Mexico. Ivory, there's a lot in Africa. Cinnamon and hors d'oeuvres and ointments and frankincense and wine. A lot of wine over in France. And oil, fine flour, and wheat, and beasts, and sheep, and horses, and chariots, and slaves, and souls of men. and the fruits that your soul lusted after are departed from you. And all things that were dainty and goodly are departed from you, and you shall find them no more at all. So God is saying, the devil now, and at the order of God, all these things people lusted after are taken away and they have nothing. Now they lose it all. And they don't even have God now. They're just following the devil. The merchants of these things that are made rich by her, they stand afar off for the fear of her torment, weeping and wailing and saying, alas, alas, that great city that was clothed in fine linen and purple and scarlet and decked with gold and precious stones and pearls. In 1 hour, so great riches are come to nothing. And every shipmaster and all the company and ships and sailors and as many as trade by sea stood afar off. And they cried when they saw the smoke of her burning, saying, what city is like unto this great city? And they cast dust on their heads and cried, weeping and wailing and saying, alas, alas, that great city wherein were made rich all that had ships in the sea by reason of her costliness. For in 1 hour she's made desolate. Rejoice over her, thou heaven, and your holy apostles and prophets, for God has avenged you on her. And a mighty angel took up a stone like a great millstone and cast it in the sea, saying, thus with violence shall that great city Babylon be thrown down and shall be found no more at all. And the voice of harpers and musicians and pipers and trumpeters shall be heard no more at all in you. No craftsman of whatsoever craft he be shall be found any more in thee. And the sound of a millstone shall be heard no more at all in thee. And the light of a candle shall shine no more at all in thee. And the voice of the bridegroom and of the bride shall be heard no more at all in thee. For your merchants were the great men of the earth, for by sorceries were all nations deceived. And in her was found the blood of prophets and of saints and of all that were slain upon the earth. Now I think at the end of the destruction of Babylon, the next thing we're going to see is Christ getting ready to come into the battle of Armageddon. So God has warned his people, get out of Babylon and don't partake of her sins. But by the end of this plague, we still see these people standing there and crying because they're so sorry they've lost everything and there's no way to get it back. But the next thing happening when Christ comes back, the bride and the bridegroom are not in Babylon. So at some point here, the rapture had to happen because now they're with Christ coming back for the final battle. So I don't know exactly. I'm still not pinpointing the rapture exactly. But right now, it looks like we might be here through the vials of his wrath, through six of them. But when we get to that final one where Christ comes to the battle, we're not here in that final one. We're with him. So I don't know where exactly rapture is, but I know that when he comes back to fight the last destruction of everything, we're with him. And at the end of Babylon, there's no more bride in Babylon. There's no more anything because Babylon is no more. It will be desolate, gone, destroyed. But I think what God wants us to just see is that Babylon's already here. Babylon's always been here, and Babylon's always been the system. It's going to become more powerful. There's going to be different rulers in it, ending up with the Antichrist himself. But Babylon is here right now because it is the entire system of greed and lust and craving of your own fame and your own recognition and your own comfort and security. It's craving all of that from a selfish, prideful system rather than God's realm. So when, you know, when he says choose your kingdom, choose the kingdom you want to live in right now, that this is just not my world. This isn't my home. This isn't what I live for, you know. He can have any of it, all of it, whatever he wants to do with it, because these things are all temporary. They just don't matter. Being where he wants you to be, doing what he wants you to do, letting his love flow. He's in such a preparation place with us right now. Like I really see people being put to the test of the thing that might could deceive them or break them, hurt them, like forgiving people who hurt you the most, so that we're learning to walk in mercy and forgiveness. The rejection, you know, that could turn you bitter against God or cause you to compromise. And God is saying, forgive and love. Forgive and love in the hardest situations. Endure in the hardest dry times. Don't need the recognition of men. Without any rebellion or, I do what I want, I don't care what you think. Not that kind of a don't need, but of a respect and a love. But when people don't want to hang out with you, they don't want to be your friend, they don't want to accept you for whatever reason, to still be able to let God's love flow in every situation. That's got to be our heart, because the relationship with God is more important than a relationship with anybody on earth, or the lack of a relationship with anybody on earth. You know, and we're being tested and tried. Will we let His love flow? And that love is the big key, because love is going to face the enemy, who is hate, anger, violence, and love and gentleness and mercy is the great weapon that we carry. The face of God, the Spirit of God, and the opposite spirit of everything the devil throws at us. So He's strengthening us up in that. And the strengthening us up sometimes is hurtful and difficult, but the joy of the Lord increases inside of us, His presence, and the smile of God at the end of a hard day, you know, becomes worth anything we go through during that day. Just to know He's here, He's pleased. Even though there is pain, there's that peace in the pain, you know, of loving in the face of evil. So if you learn to love in the face of evil, you got to face evil. You got to face things we don't like to face to learn to love. It's all for the building the character of Christ, releasing Christ through us. I just got to tell you about the vase, because I'm so overwhelmed with this miracle vase God had me paint for Nate's Uncle Joe. Because Nate warned us, Uncle Joe's going to come in here and rent one of these rooms, you know, at our building. And Uncle Joe swears, and he's rough, and he's loud, and I'm almost embarrassed to introduce you to him, you know, because he's going to embarrass me, you know. So Uncle Joe goes to church, and he loves God. He just says, I never gave him the swearing. I never got over that, you know. But he's kind of a gruff character. So God had me paint his life in a vase. I like to either on a canvas or on a real vase, but this time it was a real vase. And when I first painted it, it was like flames of fire, you know, all flame, fiery, outgoing Joe. And then God had me keep adding layers until it mellowed it out, softened it. But it's still a lot of red, basically mostly red, with little colors in it. And then He had me start painting deep down inside of it was all purple and blue, which is Christ inside of Joe, and who Joe really is when he's completely in the presence of God. But that doesn't get to the outside of him and show up as much, you know. So God had me start painting this purple all over the outside. And no matter how much purple I painted on it, I couldn't see purple. And I went, God, I am putting the brush in purple, and I am painting purple all over this thing, and all I see is red. You know, the red overpowers it every time. And finally, God said, all that I am inside of Joe can't show until he lets the light of Christ show in his life. He said, take the vase outside in the sunlight. And oh my gosh, I took it outside, purple. Just shining all over it, purple. It was like a miracle how it turned purple, wasn't it? That was amazing. I can't even take a picture to show anybody that, because I tried to take a picture outside and it glared, you know, you couldn't see it. It's like you had to really do it. But I've never seen anything like it. It doesn't show until you take it out in the sunlight. It was amazing. But that's what we're like. There's something of God inside of us, but unless we're walking in the light of God, it doesn't shine to other people and they don't see it, you know. But when we let the light of Christ shine through us, they get to see Him and not just us. So it was a miracle vase. It was so cool. So Joe He had somebody from his church come in today, and the guy come up and said, Joe said you could talk to me about his vase. So I had to take him outside and show him, this is Joe, really. Look at what he's like out in the light of God. You know? That was cool. But that's us. And you just got to let that light of Jesus' love shine.